What is going on, crypto family? So today we're coming to you live. Well, I guess it's not live. This is going to be pre-recorded. Anyways, we're coming from St. Kitts, beautiful tropical destination. It reminds me a little bit of like Hawaii meets maybe like Bahamian culture. It's pretty incredible, very beautiful. But we're here for Roger Ver, the real Roger Ver. We had a really great conversation with him. You know, we would have loved to have done it outside, but as you can see, it's really windy and really loud. So we basically did it in a conference room. So we don't get to see all the beauty and nature that's here, but we get to hear an amazing story. And we get to hear so much, like what he's done for the space, how many projects he's helped bring to fruition that are still of value and still being used today in the crypto space. We hear about who Satoshi Nakamoto turned over the keys to Bitcoin too, and then what happened to that person. We hear about just an incredible amount of different things that he's done through the space, how he could have retired countless times. I mean, this guy was a very, very early adopter of Bitcoin, and how he's still so hungry and so driven that he doesn't retire, he just keeps building. So it's pretty incredible, you know, the whole story that we hear. You know, some of the stuff that we talk about is, you know, things that he's never, I don't think, ever said publicly. So it's you know, real honor to hear his side of things, to hear how Bitcoin and Bitcoin Cash kind of came to be, how he was kind of the face of Bitcoin in the beginning, and everybody thought he created it. To now everybody thinks that he created Bitcoin Cash. So we learned a whole bunch of stuff, and it was a real honor, you know, to hear his story. And, you know, full disclosure, he's also an advisor and an investor in Monarch. So wanted to throw that out there for you. But it's a pretty incredible story. I hope you enjoy it. And
just a friendly reminder, Crypto Beetle shows are never financial advice, recommendations, or trading strategies. The views expressed here are solely that of Robert Beetles and his guests. Robert Beetles is the co-founder of the Monarch Wallet, host of Trading View Sessions, Crypto Beetles on YouTube, and on several entities. Robert's opinions here do not reflect that of those entities. Some information shared here may not actually be factual. These shows are for information and entertainment purposes only. Never invest a single Satoshi or penny in anything without first seeking the counsel and advice of a professional financial advisor. Robert Beetles is not a financial expert or advisor. Investing in anything is super dangerous. You can lose all of your money, so always trade at your own risk. And one last thing before we get into this, please help us grow the family. Give us a comment and review on the Apple or Google Play Store. It's super quick and easy. Just scroll down, click the little stars, comment, and just help us grow the family. All right, so now that that's out of the way, let's get into this.
What is going on, crypto family? So today we've got the one and only Roger Ver with us. So
glad to be back with you again.
It's always great to see you. So thanks a bunch. We're here in this beautiful island of St. Kitts. Really appreciate you, you know, making time for us here.
Glad you guys came all the way down here. It's not a short trek, so thank you for coming.
Yeah, it's beautiful. I mean, we'd love to do this outside and show you guys the and gals the ocean and everything, but it's so windy out there right now, it would just whip through the mic. So we'll do that in some of the B-roll for you. But yeah, I thought it'd be great to get Roger on here and just kind of tell him, you know, have him tell us his story. You know, who is Roger Ver? What's why did he get into crypto? All that kind of cool stuff. So that way people that don't know you all that well yet might. So maybe see a different side of you. So who is Roger Ver?
Yeah, Roger Ver is a 40-year-old man at this point. It's hard to believe it. I've been involved in crypto for 8.5 years full-time now. But I guess it actually kind of started as a kid reading science fiction books. And in these one example is like Cryptonomicon by Neal Stephenson. And in this book, they have, you know, Cybercash, and they're doing all these interesting things on the internet with that. And then another book was Future Imperfect by David Friedman, the son of Milton Friedman. And he's a law professor at Santa Clara University in real life. And in this book, he's talking about how once the internet has some form of cyber anonymous cyber cash, is what I think he was calling it, he was talking about how he'd be able to practice law on the internet without a law license. And he would be able to accept anonymous payments from people on the internet, but using public key cryptography and digital signatures, he'd be able to prove to his customers that they're dealing with the same person over and over, and they can leave feedback for him, and they can have like a rating system, and so people can know that they're getting good quality legal advice from him. And if you kind of think about it, what he described, and I think he wrote this book in like 1999, he was kind of describing like the Silk Road, but for legal, like lawyering services. And for me, like all this just seems so incredibly interesting, because a lot of times I think it's really dumb when governments require people to get licenses to do something. It's usually not about safety of the consumer. It's about the current people that are doing that industry keeping out competitors to their industry so they can raise the prices up and charge more for what they're charging for. And that actually leads to a worse consumer experience. We have things like Yelp and consumer reviews and this and that to keep track of you know, what are good companies doing good quality products and which ones aren't. But I digressed a little bit there. Anyhow, a decade later after reading all of these books, I heard about Bitcoin for the first time, and I heard about it in reference to the Silk Road. I wasn't interested in, you know, buying or selling drugs at all myself, but when I heard about this, I thought, what kind of money are they possibly using for this? This must be amazing. So I Googled Bitcoin and looked into it, and it was literally, I think, the most exciting week of my entire life. I went for about an entire week only sleeping maybe half an hour or an hour a night, until after a week of doing that, I got so sick due to lack of sleep that my friend literally had to take me to the hospital, and they gave me some sort of a sedative to calm me down, because I felt like this thing I'd been waiting to come into existence my whole life finally had come into existence. It was finally here, it was finally real, and it was this thing called Bitcoin. And so I devoted, you know, all of my time, all of my money, all of my effort into promoting Bitcoin at that point. And shortly after I'd heard about it, one of the very first people I called to tell about it was my friend Jesse Powell, that I knew from Magic the Gathering days when I was a kid playing that. And for those that don't know, Jesse Powell today is the CEO of Kraken.com, one of the biggest cryptocurrency exchanges in the entire world. And I called him, I said, hey man, have you heard about Bitcoin? You gotta look into this. He goes, yeah, I just heard about it too. I'm busy Googling everything as well. And then I called another mutual friend of ours and I told him all about Bitcoin as well. And he was not convinced. He said, Roger, if you really think Bitcoin's such a good idea, why don't you buy more of it? And I had already bought a nice stack of it. And he said, if you think it's so good, why don't you buy more of it? And he said this in a sarcastic, yeah, demeaning way. And I told him, you're right. And so I went out and bought even more. And he didn't buy any Bitcoin for maybe another year or two later. And he has some now. But I'm sure he regrets not having, you know, jumped in right as early on.
Yeah, I bet everybody does. And before we get, you know, too deep down the crypto rabbit hole, you know, so where are you from? Don't worry, I'm not asking questions to figure out your private passphrases and stuff, right? But where were you born, man?
So I was born and raised in Silicon Valley. So I grew up in Santa Clara, California, for people that are familiar with the area. And just seemed normal to me, but now as an adult and having lived other places in the world, I realize Silicon Valley is a pretty special place in the world. And I'm a big fan of the South Bay, San Francisco not so much.
So. Yeah, San Francisco has its issues. Yeah. But so what do you do for fun, man? What do you do for hobbies?
I think my biggest and only hobby has been Bitcoin and then cryptocurrencies, and outside of that has been Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. I've been a big fan of Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu MMA. I've been enjoying watching MMA for a couple of decades, and I've been doing jiu-jitsu for over a decade now and really, really enjoy that as well.
All right. Favorite fighter?
Kazushi Sakuraba, if you remember him from back in the days of Pride.
The gi and everything, yeah.
Yeah, he was quite the amazing guy. So.
Love it. So, you know, you got into jiu-jitsu, you're still doing it now.
Yeah.
And so are you teaching, are you training, what are you doing?
Here in St. Kitts, I teach and train when I'm in Japan. There's a million black belts around, so it's really amazing to learn from them. And I used to compete a lot, and then Bitcoin really consumed a lot of my life, so I haven't been able to compete as much recently, but maybe this year, hopefully I'll have some time to train hard and do some more tournaments. We'll see. So I tore my ACL a year and a half ago, so that put me on the sidelines for a bit, but my knee's starting to feel okay again now. It's certainly not the same, but...
Yeah, those are never fun.
Yeah. No.
And so we're in St. Kitts right now, but you spend a lot of your time in Japan, right?
Yep, I float around the world quite a bit, so I know.
So what made you pick, you know, St. Kitts in Japan, you know, from like the Silicon Valley?
So once upon a time, there was a Japanese girlfriend, and I figured there were more to be had in Japan, so that's kind of how I wound up in Japan. And then St. Kitts has an awesome, they call it a citizenship by investment program, where you can buy a piece of real estate here, and you can get the citizenship. They claim in as little as 3 months, but reality is closer to 6 months, but St. Kitts is pretty awesome on that front. And with the St. Kitts passport, you can go to all of Europe without a visa, you can go to all of South America without a visa, and you can go to most of Asia without a visa. I can even go to Russia without a visa. American citizens need a visa to go to Russia, so it's a pretty convenient, fun passport. I don't have to spend any time here at all. I just come because I like it, and the weather's great, and the food's good, and you know, there's lots of great things to like about St. Kitts. So.
Yeah, I think the taxes here are probably pretty good too, right?
Yeah, the taxes here are pretty good. There are absolutely zero personal or corporate income tax or personal or corporate capital gains tax. Not only are there no taxes, you don't even have to file a tax return at the end of the year. So that's pretty amazing. So for personal income taxes, you don't even have to file a tax return at the end of the year. So.
Yeah, for people in the States, yeah, that'll end you in jail.
So imagine, you know, trading crypto all year, doing all, you know, having what, you know, all your crazy capital gains or losses depending on the year, and then you don't even have to file a return at the end of the year. Like that's how America used to be for the first 100 years of America too, and it became the most prosperous nation on earth because of it. I think St. Kitts has some really good things in store as well, and it's really convenient not to have to spend, you know, weeks and weeks of my time just compiling all the tax documents for the reporting aspect.
So. Yeah, you talked about earlier how you get so, like, you know, in depth with Bitcoin, you just focused all your time on it. You know, it kind of landed you in the hospital, right?
Yeah.
You can see there's this intensity to you, man.
I'm 8.5 yeah. years in, and there's still an intensity to it. So.
There's like this hunger, this intensity with you, man. It's awesome. And you don't even drink coffee, right? So
no.
You don't drink coffee.
I've never even tried coffee.
I've
never even tried it, yeah.
Why? You just natural high or what?
So I feel like I have a good level of energy already, but the reason actually I've never tried coffee is that it doesn't smell good to me. I don't know, maybe it's some genetic thing, but like coffee does not smell like something you should consume.
Okay, so. All right, yeah, I love my coffee.
I've tried caffeine before. I've had, you know, Coca-Cola and Pepsi, and I don't know if root beer has caffeine in it or not, so it's not an anti-caffeine thing. It's just coffee doesn't smell good to me.
Okay, yeah, because you have this like intensity, you know, where you're just like, you're just on another level all the time. So I think I'd be curious to see what you'd be like amped up on coffee.
Well, I've tried some of those pre-workout supplements sometimes before a hard jiu-jitsu training. I'll try the, what is it called? Like a NO Explode or something like that. And oh my God, do I have a lot of energy with that. Like usually after training, I'll need a nap. But after that, I can go get on the computer and I'm super focused and get a lot of work done. And so.
And then so, you know, maybe tell us what's like a typical day for you, man? Like what do you, yeah, like what do you get up? What do you do?
I wish I could say it's super, super exciting every day, but no, a typical day is wake up in bed like everybody, and then I don't get out of bed. The computer's right next to the bed on the bedstand, so I grab my laptop and start looking at what happened overnight, see what emails came in, what news happened, you know, what's going on, and then usually start answering emails. And my typical day, for the most part, just consists of replying to emails and Telegram messages. I'm on both those all day, every day. And I was doing emails last night. I said goodnight to you guys here at the hotel lobby at like I think 10 or 11 p.m. or something like that. But then I went home and did emails until 1 a.m. and then went to bed and got up. And then again, checked email and checked the latest news and then came here with you guys. It's, I don't know, 10 a.m. now or something like that. So
you don't need glasses?
No, I'm really, really fortunate. So I have better than 20/20 vision. So I had like 20/20/10 in one eye, which means what normal people can see from 10 feet away, I can see from 20 feet away. And the other eye is like 20/15-ish or something like that. So I have a better than 20/20 vision. I'm real, real thankful for that. So.
That's awesome, man. And so you kind of talked about how you got into Bitcoin. So
yeah.
Maybe kind of walk us through, you know, a lot of people don't know this, but you're one of the pioneers of Bitcoin, right? A lot of people thought you were Bitcoin. And now everybody thinks you're Bitcoin Cash. Everybody thinks, oh, he created Bitcoin Cash. It's like, well, everybody before was accusing him of committing, you know,
creating Bitcoin,
right?
Yeah.
And so now everybody's accusing you of creating Bitcoin Cash. So
I've been here and done that before, yeah.
I love it. I think it's funny, you know, and I try to explain to people, you know, the differences, but it'd be great, you know, for people to hear from you, you know, you kind of told us how you found Bitcoin.
Yeah.
But
what did you do?
Yeah, did you do in Bitcoin, and then how'd you get to Bitcoin Cash?
Yeah, so when I heard about it for the first time, I was so excited because it allowed you to send and receive any amount of money with anyone, anywhere in the world, instantly, basically for free, and there's nothing anybody can do to stop it. And
that's magic.
That's magic internet money. And that's the little, you know, 15-second pitch I've been giving about Bitcoins for 8.5 years now.
And I can tell you've done it before.
I have. And that pitch is still completely true. It was true about Bitcoin back in 2011, 2012, 2013, and even 2014. It's no longer true about the BTC version of Bitcoin today, but that pitch is still completely true about Bitcoin Cash today. So what did I do? Well, nobody was using Bitcoin for much of anything at all. And even when I first heard about it, the price was less than a dollar. But I knew from my study of economics that people were going to start using it as money. There wasn't any doubt in my mind that people were going to start using it as money. And so because the supply was limited, as more and more people started to use it as money, I knew the price would go up. And the price going up is a nice side effect of people using it as money. People using it as money is fantastic because I want to bring more economic freedom to the world. I want people to have control over their own money and not have to get permission from banks or politicians to do what they want with their own money. So my first step was to buy some Bitcoin. My next step was to start helping build the infrastructure to allow more people to use Bitcoin in commerce. So when that happened, I started investing. I was literally the first person in the entire world to start investing in these various startups. One of the very first ones I invested in was a company called BitInstant, which allowed anybody to buy Bitcoin at any 7-Eleven or Walgreens or Starbucks all over the entire country. It was really a big deal at the time. Today, that doesn't seem like a big deal, but back then it was a really big deal. And I was the second person ever involved at blockchain.com today. Back then it was blockchain.info, but the guy was running it out of his bedroom living at home with his mom and his parents. And I emailed him and said, hey, I'm a fan of Bitcoin. Do you need any money to expand your operations? I'm a fan of what you're trying to do with this. He said, oh yeah, I'm currently running it on a Mac Mini at home. I should probably buy a real server for this, so I could use some money for that. So I sent him some money for that. I think I paid him in Bitcoin. And anyhow, I basically was years ahead of the first round of venture capital investors, and I kind of seeded the entire first generation of Bitcoin businesses because I wanted to make peer-to-peer cash for the world. And when Bitcoin stopped being useful as peer-to-peer cash, and then another one we should talk about, like people don't know of today, but the big complaint about Bitcoin back then is, yeah, Bitcoin, what can you buy with it? You can buy, you know, maybe some drugs online and that's it. In 2012, I launched BitcoinStore.com, where we had more than 500,000 consumer electronics products at prices predominantly cheaper than Amazon, and we only accepted Bitcoin for these products. And we sold millions of dollars worth of these computer parts. And suddenly the mainstream media, their narrative up to that point had been, oh, Bitcoin, you can't buy anything with it. Now everybody can say, no, you can buy more than 500,000 computer parts at prices cheaper than Amazon with Bitcoin. And I went on Fox News and other, you know, mainstream media to promote BitcoinStore.com back in the day. And it was a really big turning point in the adoption. That's what led the Newegg's and the Tiger Directs and, you know, the Expedias and all these other businesses to have to start accepting Bitcoin, because we were out there on social media saying, hey, look at all this business you're losing by not accepting Bitcoin. And thanks to, you know, I was in the seed round for BitPay as well. So BitPay is the number one merchant processor for all the, you know, Bitcoin and Bitcoin Cash payments today. You know, I was right with them at their booth at CES. I think it was it was January of 2012, I think is when that one was. And I helped them at their booth at CES the entire time, and people weren't so aware of Bitcoin at that point.
It's incredible what you've done. I mean, if you just look at all the different things you just mentioned, a lot of people don't realize, you know, how far you've kind of pushed this all forward with philanthropy, you know, basically just giving to people, and then all the different companies that you've actually, you know, helped fund to give them, you know, legs to grow. You know, how many different companies have you helped fund or put in the, you know, put, I guess, out there for us to use? I mean, every time I look at a company that's out there that's in existence, that's in crypto, it's like, hey, Roger funded that, or Roger helped, you know, make that happen. You know, it's
almost all of the first generation ones, with the only major exception being Coinbase. And in hindsight, I should have invested in Coinbase as well. But
why didn't you?
A lot of people don't know this, actually. So blockchain.com today, it used to be blockchain.info, and Coinbase started out as the same company. It was one single company. And then the two founders, Brian Armstrong and Ben Reeves, had like a disagreement. So Brian Armstrong wanted Coinbase to be able to recover their users' keys and reset their passwords and have custody of the user funds. Ben Reeves thought, no. People need to have their own private keys and need to be in charge of their own money and not have some central entity be able to control or freeze accounts or control it. So they had a split. And so even to this day, I'm very clearly on the side of people should have their own private keys and be in charge of their own money and not use some sort of a central entity to control their keys for them, and unless that's what they want. But I think you've kind of missed the point if that's what you're busy doing.
But so, if you look at the two companies, you can clearly see like which one's had the most adoption, right? It's the one that's for easier for customers, right?
Well, that's the perception, but there's actually more transactions and more users for blockchain.com than there is for Coinbase. And so that's a really interesting thing, because everybody thinks of Coinbase because Coinbase has done a better job of making it easier to buy or sell your crypto. But as far as people actually transacting and using cryptocurrency, blockchain.com still has more users and more transactions happening each day, which is interesting. And a lot of people don't realize that.
So. Which company makes more money, though, if you're an investor?
I don't know. I don't have access to the financial books of Coinbase. They've certainly raised more money at Coinbase, but blockchain's doing all right on the financial side as well. So they have quite a bit of advertisers, and now you can buy and sell cryptocurrency in there. And so they're doing all right as well. And it would be interesting. I really don't know which one has done more on the financial side, but I'm a fan of blockchain because it puts people in charge of their own money. I'm a big fan of Coinbase because they made it easy for people to buy cryptocurrency. So I guess in an ideal world, people can use Coinbase to buy crypto and then transfer it over to their blockchain wallet where they have their keys themselves.
Yeah, both are,
you know, and use both. I have accounts of both. Yeah.
Yeah, it's great. And then as far as like, you know, the companies that you've invested in, you know, how many are we talking about here?
Dozens. Yeah, probably in the ballpark of 50 plus, I think. At this point, a lot of them don't exist anymore, but a lot of them still do. So like I was in the seed rounds for a lot of these companies everybody's heard of today. So like Kraken, BitPay, Blockchain.com, of course. Purse.io is one of my favorite ones. If you haven't seen Purse.io, you can save 20-25% on every purchase on Amazon by using Bitcoin Cash. The shirt and shorts I'm wearing, I bought on Purse.io with my Bitcoin Cash. There's a whole bunch. If you go to rogervere.com, we have some of them listed. Another one I don't keep up with as closely, but like Ripple. I was literally the second person ever involved at Ripple. And the reason for that is at the time, Bitcoin was $2 each. The guy that founded Ripple said, hey, I know how to make Bitcoin without requiring mining. And so we can have, you know, fast, cheap, reliable, irreversible payments without requiring mining. And I said, okay, let's give it a try and see what happens. And I don't know if they've succeeded with that or not. I don't know a whole lot about what they've been up to, but Ripple's, what, the third biggest cryptocurrency by market cap. I put up the seed money to start Ripple, so we'll see what happens on that front as well. And so to circle back to your point, back in the olden days, people said, Roger, Bitcoin's just your special project. You just want us all to use it because you'll make a bunch of money if that happens. And like, I did make a bunch of money because that happened, but that wasn't my goal. My goal is I want to empower every single individual to be able to do whatever the hell they want with their own money and not need permission from some politician they've never met. And Bitcoin used to enable that. Bitcoin Cash enables that today, and so do a bunch of other cryptocurrencies. I'm not a Bitcoin Cash maximalist. I'm a maximalist for anything that works. If it's useful, people are going to want to use it, and I want to build all these tools that make cryptocurrency useful for people to use around the world. And whether it's Bitcoin Cash or Zcash or Dash or Ethereum or anything that works, I'm a fan of it. So.
What do you think about like the actual Bitcoin, you know, core team that's actually working on the code all the time? A lot of people don't realize that there's actually people back there tinkering all the time.
Yeah.
And if they have a bad day, they mess something up. What happens to the perception of Bitcoin if they, you know, say allow for double spending, or there's a whole bunch of magic money appears in everybody's wallet, or you know, somebody, you know, ends up doing something nefarious with it all?
I think they already screwed up horribly, and that's why you saw a huge percentage of the ecosystem shatter off and start using Bitcoin Cash, myself included, and very many of the original people that were promoting Bitcoin. Another guy, Rick Falkving, he's the founder of the Swedish Private Party. I think it was Forbes or some major publication listed him as like one of the top 100 minds of the 20th century or something like that, and just a really, really smart, interesting guy. In 2012, he put out a blog post saying about how he's selling all of his assets and going all in on Bitcoin, and he did that in 2012. Today, he's a big, giant Bitcoin Cash supporter because Bitcoin Cash is the version of Bitcoin that we got excited about back in 2011, 2012, 2013. If something's useful, people are going to use it. And so back to your question about the developers, what happens if they make a mistake? They already made a huge mistake.
Well, 2010 they did. They had to basically delete a whole bunch of money.
There was a big hard fork in 2010.
Last year.
There was another one.
Last year, they could have destroyed Bitcoin, but some anonymous person said, hey, guys.
It was an anonymous Bitcoin Cash developer.
Somebody
actually
said,
tipped off the Bitcoin
was
Core
Satoshi?
Developers.
Was it Satoshi?
I don't think it was Satoshi, but.
I mean, some anonymous guy says, hey, guys, before you launch this code, you might want to take a look at it because you're about
No, the code was already in production, and it was live on the network.
Oh, not all the nodes had grabbed it yet, or what?
No, everybody was running, but people hadn't.
I didn't realize it went live yet. I thought it was just right before you got pushed.
No. So up until that point, the Bitcoin Core developers had just trolled incessantly the Bitcoin Cash developers. They say, oh, Bcash doesn't have any developers, and the Bcash developers are, it's just a bunch of juvenile name calling. And they were basically saying that Bitcoin Cash doesn't have smart developers. And one of these Bitcoin Cash developers found that there was a bug in Bitcoin Core that would allow infinite inflation there. And like nobody had exploited the bug at that point, but it was there present live in the code, put out by, it was code written by Matt Corello, Blue Matt is his name, from Bitcoin Core. And so one of these Bitcoin Cash developers was nice enough to point this out to them, and they rushed out an emergency patch to fix that issue. And thankfully, to a large extent after that, a lot of the trolling from those people towards Bitcoin Cash not having smart developers or good developers has toned down a little bit. It still exists, but it's not to the same extent that it used to be. And it's really, you know, juvenile name calling as far as I'm concerned. I mean, there's lots of really smart developers on both sides, but the Bitcoin Core developers really got it wrong from the economic code of Bitcoin. If for Bitcoin to be useful to people, it needs to have fast, cheap, reliable transactions. And Bitcoin had that in 2011, 2012, 2013. And then I think in 2014 or 2015, they introduced this thing called replace by fee, which basically allows anybody to divert a payment to anybody else at any point after it's been broadcast to the network, but before it's been included in the block. And then they intentionally tried to make the blocks full. So the last like day or two, the average transaction time on the Bitcoin Core network, on the BTC network, has been over 24 hours to get your transaction included in a block. As we're recording this, there's somewhere in the ballpark of, I think, 70, 80, or 90,000 Bitcoin transactions waiting in the mempool to be included in a block. That's a disaster for user experience. If you want fast, cheap, reliable transactions, you don't want tens of thousands of transactions waiting to be included in a block. That's a disaster for commerce. And that's why, as somebody that was one of the first people to start using Bitcoin in commerce, it stopped being usable in commerce. That's why I switched to using Bitcoin Cash, because it works incredibly well and it's accepted at more than 100,000 websites. It's very liquid. It's the fourth biggest cryptocurrency by market cap. Short answer, I'm using it because it's useful. And if something else becomes more useful, I'll switch to that.
In a nutshell, for people to understand the difference between like Bitcoin and Bitcoin Cash, what's like the easiest way to explain it to them?
I think that even easier than explaining it to them is use it.
Well, I've definitely done that before and showed that to them, but yeah. Maybe you can explain.
So explaining wise, you'll pay $3, $4, $5, maybe $10, maybe even $20 to make a transaction on the Bitcoin network. You'll pay a tenth of a penny to make a Bitcoin Cash transaction, or even less than a tenth of a penny.
So sounds like magic. Why?
Because it works the same way Bitcoin used to work. The blocks are never full intentionally, and the transactions are irreversible. As soon as you broadcasted a transaction, that's supposed to be the end of it. And it is the end of it for Bitcoin Cash transactions. It's not the end of it for Bitcoin transactions. So if you're trying to do online payments, Bitcoin Cash provides an awesome user experience. Sadly, and it breaks my heart to say this as the first investor in the Bitcoin ecosystem, but Bitcoin provides a horrible user experience at this point, and that's why people are starting to use things other than Bitcoin for payments online.
What happens if Bitcoin Cash's price gets, you know, high like Bitcoin's? Is that going to affect, you know, the speed in transactions?
No, because by intentional design, and it was the intentional design of Bitcoin to begin with, and then the project got hijacked. But the blocks are never going to be full. And if the blocks are never full, that means there's always room for your transactions in the blocks. And so your transactions will go through quickly, reliably, safely. That's the entire point of peer-to-peer cash. Fast, cheap, reliable transactions. Bitcoin Cash has it. And I'm not attacking Bitcoin. I'm just telling the truth about Bitcoin. Bitcoin no longer has it.
Yeah, I mean, Satoshi Nakamoto's probably created one of the greatest inventions of my lifetime,
yeah,
for sure.
For sure.
So, and, you know, a lot of people thought that you were Mr. Bitcoin in the beginning. They thought, you know, it's your project.
And to some extent, I was, right? There wasn't anybody else investing in the project back then. And now there's lots of people investing in Bitcoin Cash, but I'm, you know, busy promoting it and using my platform that I have as the CEO of Bitcoin.com to promote it. And people give those same criticisms, but they weren't really true the last time around, and they're not true this time around. And I'm telling people, I told people, everybody, hey, use Bitcoin, buy Bitcoin, this is gonna be amazing, and it turned out to be true, and I'm saying the same thing about Bitcoin Cash. I think it'll be true again, and I did it for the same reasons last time around as that I'm doing it this time around.
So you basically, you know, help promote and get adoption for Bitcoin, then you got into it kind of with the core team, and then decided to jump ship?
So there's video clips on me. You can see on YouTube of me saying, we're so lucky to have these smart software developers on the core team, like this is wonderful. And I was, you know, singing their praises. And then when I watched them integrate replace by fee, that was a disaster. And then when I saw them intentionally try to make the blocks full, they call it a fee market. It's not a fee market. What it is it's an artificial production quota on the amount of block space. They've artificially limited the amount of block space that the miners are allowed to produce on Bitcoin. That's an absolute hard fork to the economic code that made Bitcoin successful to begin with. So we had this economic code of fast, cheap, reliable payments that made Bitcoin successful. They kicked that to the curb, and now their new economic formula is slow, expensive, unreliable payments. And if you look at it, that's exactly what they're advocating for. Well, if you have one payment network that's fast, cheap, and reliable, Bitcoin Cash and a bunch of other altcoins as well, and you have another payment network that's slow, expensive, and unreliable, the thing that everybody's calling Bitcoin, that still has this first mover advantage and huge name recognition, but the payments are slow, expensive, and unreliable. You don't have to be a rocket scientist to see that people are gonna migrate from the slow, expensive, and unreliable payment network to the payment networks that are fast, cheap, and reliable. And that's why we saw Bitcoin's market share go from 100% market share to like 60-ish percent at the moment.
Yeah, one of the things that, you know, a lot of people just don't understand is there's a core team still developing Bitcoin all the time that can actually create problems. And who kind of like nominated them to take Satoshi's original blockchain and just start implementing these changes? I realize you have to have consensus and you're supposed to have people that, you know, raise their hand and say, yeah, go ahead and do that. But who put these guys in charge?
You really touched a hot button issue there. Yeah. So when Satoshi left the project, he asked Gavin Andreessen, hey, Gavin, and Gavin had been helping with the project a lot since 2010 and was, you know, writing code for the Bitcoin core protocol at that point. And Satoshi said, hey, can I put your email address on the website as somebody that people can contact about the project? And Gavin said, yeah, sure. And what Satoshi didn't tell Gavin at the same time, by the way, when I add your email to there, I'm going to remove mine. So that's what Satoshi did. So Satoshi literally put Gavin's contact information on the website and removed Satoshi's own information. So like Satoshi turned over the project to Gavin right then and there. And Gavin wanted some help and some other people to help with it. So Gavin, in addition to, now they're using GitHub, but back then they were using SourceForge, which was like a precursor to GitHub. Anyhow, he invited some other people and gave them access also to the source code for Bitcoin. So one of the people he gave access to was a guy named Greg Maxwell, Luke Jr., and a couple of others. So it'd be like, if I was Satoshi, I gave you the keys to the software repository. Then Gavin shared those keys with some other people. And then later on, those other people revoked Gavin's keys and kicked him out of the whole project and totally, basically they hijacked the entire project of Bitcoin. And not only did they revoke Gavin's access after he was nice enough to share his access with them, who, and again, Gavin received it from Satoshi, they then totally hard forked the entire economic code of the project and basically managed to get control of the main discussion platforms as well. So our Bitcoin on Reddit is a completely censored platform. If you try and tell this story on our Bitcoin, your post will be deleted. If you try and say anything in favor of bigger blocks or scaling on chain, your post will be deleted. And the same is true of BitcoinTalk.org, which are the two biggest discussion platforms for Bitcoin. And in the early days, everybody was of, you know, the point of view, let's scale Bitcoin to be cash for the world. It's supposed to be peer-to-peer electronic cash. They started censoring anybody that would post anything like that. And then all the people that were new to Bitcoin only got to hear this store of value narrative and that, oh, Bitcoin's not meant to be used as money and you should just hold your Bitcoin and never use it. And then over time, because all the people with the original voices like myself and Gavin and all the original people, and you know, Brian Armstrong as well, all the original people that were involved in Bitcoin, our voices were silenced on this platform. All the new people that came to Bitcoin, they only heard the new narrative that Bitcoin's a store of value. Original adopters and promoters like myself, we became the minority and basically got pushed out of the Bitcoin network. And we found a home with Bitcoin Cash because, as Gavin said, Bitcoin Cash, and he said this publicly, it's on his Twitter feed, Bitcoin Cash is the Bitcoin that he started working on in 2010, a store of value and a medium of exchange. And for me, it's the same thing. Bitcoin Cash is the version of Bitcoin I started working on in January of 2011. A store of value and a medium of exchange. And this whole idea that you can have something just be a store of value all by itself, that's economic nonsense. It's a bunch of people that haven't studied economics, if you believe that. In order for something to be usable as a store of value, it must have a secondary use case. If you don't have an additional use case, it's not going to be a store of value. So.
Oh, incredible. So that's a lot right there.
Yeah, that was a bit of a
That is a lot. I mean, there's so many different ways you can talk about this. I mean, basically the guy that Satoshi gave the keys to the castle to got kicked out of the castle too.
Yeah.
And so now there's a bunch of people, squatters, you know, running. It's kind of like one way you could look at this.
Yeah, and another short thing. Everybody likes to claim, oh, Bitcoin's censorship resistant. How can you claim it's censorship resistant when the main discussion platforms are completely censored platforms?
That's interesting. I think everybody should go over there to Reddit and try to ask some questions and see if you get censored.
Yeah, your post will get deleted. Or just Google, are Bitcoin censorship? And there's a couple of essays by some guy using the pen name John Block. And he documents it with screenshots. And if you spend it's like maybe a 15-minute read. Your jaw will drop when you see the censorship that went on there, and it's all documented there. You'll just have your mind blown. And don't underestimate it. Like, censorship happens because censorship works at shaping public opinion. That's why governments all around the world love to censor things. That's why China censors the internet. That's why all these governments, you know, love to censor the internet, because censorship works at shaping people's worldview and opinion. So
yeah, big old mainstream media. Yeah, sadly. For sure. So, I mean, I guess, when you helped in the beginning and you pushed Bitcoin forward and then you started, you know, you kind of left and you went over to Bitcoin Cash, you've kept the website, Bitcoin.com.
Yeah.
And so what do you say to people that, you know, are saying, hey, wait a minute, you know, Roger's selling Bitcoin Cash, not Bitcoin, but he's saying it's Bitcoin.com. You know, they're being bamboozled. What's going on here? So what do you tell these people?
Yeah, I'd say I never left Bitcoin. I'd say sure. The BTC version of Bitcoin left me.
Gavin.
And Gavin, yeah. Well, I was right there with Gavin's side when the whole thing happened. So, I can go to Bitcoin.com. Our forums are completely uncensored. You can go and call me a jerk and a scammer saying, oh, Roger's promoting Bcash. You can post it there, and we're not going to delete your post, which is not true of the discussion platforms for Bitcoin, right? Our Bitcoin and BitcoinTalk.org. But we educate people very clearly. We explain the differences. We show how it works. We're very clear about it, and we label them both very, very clearly. So the address formats are different. So I think if anybody's saying that they're, I would even argue if someone goes and buys BTC thinking that it's Bitcoin, they're the ones that have been fooled. They're the ones that are being tricked. It's right there in the title of the original Bitcoin white paper. Bitcoin is a peer-to-peer electronic cash system. The BTC version of Bitcoin doesn't work as a peer-to-peer electronic cash system anymore. So if you buy BTC thinking it's Bitcoin, you got fooled, you got tricked, you got cheated. Whereas if you buy Bitcoin Cash thinking it's Bitcoin, go and read the white paper. It's clear the white paper is talking about Bitcoin Cash. It's not talking about the BTC version of Bitcoin. And go and try both. Like, I invite you, please try both. Buy $20 of both, send them from one phone to another, or from your computer back to your phone. Do that two or three times, and you will be sold on Bitcoin Cash being the more useful version of Bitcoin. Because if you do that with BTC, you won't have any money left. If you send $20 two or three times, all your money will be gone. With Bitcoin Cash, you'll still have $20 left.
You know, he's not lying. Actually, I went and I did a live stream a little while ago where I tried to send somebody in the chat a dollar of Bitcoin. It cost me $23.56. to send $1.
And once they received the dollar, though, yeah. It wasn't spendable because it would cost him another $23 to spend the $1.
It was crazy. And that's just to get it to go through the transaction, I guess, so that we get the transaction less than an hour, because you have to kind of bump it up a little bit.
You have to pay $23 to be at the front of the line to get included in a block. Yeah. If you'd only paid $18, you might have been waiting a day or two or more.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, with Bitcoin Cash, I actually bumped it up as high as it would go. It cost me 9 cents, and they got it in like a couple seconds. It was pretty quick.
Yeah, and to be honest, if you paid 9 cents, you overpaid.
For sure. So. I cranked both of them up, you know, just a little bit to, you know, to make it go through in an hour, because I wanted them to have it in an hour.
I have more good news, though, too. So in the future, and this used to be the case on Bitcoin back in the early days, and these core developers got rid of it, there will be 100% completely free transactions on Bitcoin Cash again someday. And the way it used to work on Bitcoin, because most Bitcoin transactions were completely free, not just cheap, but completely free up until like 2013-ish. And the way it worked is if your Bitcoins had been sitting at an address more than, you know, X number of hours or days, they knew it wasn't a spam transaction when you would move it, so it could be completely free. And that's coming back to Bitcoin Cash again at some point here in the not-too-distant future. So if your coins have sat for a couple of days and you go to move them, your transaction will be completely free, no fee whatsoever. And I think that's a big deal. And you'll only have to pay a tenth of a penny if you just moved your Bitcoin Cash, you know, recently. So
that's incredible. So being able to move Bitcoin Cash for free.
Yeah, and that's how Bitcoin used to work. Remember, I remember it was a big headache for me when I first started having to pay a fee on Bitcoin, because we had the accounting department keeping track of all the transactions, and it was very clear. You moved this many Bitcoin in, and the other person received that many, you know, Bitcoin out. It was there. And then we started having to keep track of the fees on top of it, because the amount of money going out of the wallet didn't match the amount of money going into the new wallet or the other wallet or the person you were paying. And it was a lot of extra accounting work. So I'm really looking forward to reducing the amount of accounting work on the back end there by getting rid of a lot of the fees.
People will appreciate it, man.
Yeah, the accounting department will love it.
So you've been in Bitcoin a long time. Yeah. You've bought a lot of Bitcoin. Obviously, the forks have probably produced you some Bitcoin Cash. Yeah. You're doing great. Why are you still doing this? Why do you care?
Because if you study economics, the best way to bring more economic freedom to the world is through having, you know, more free markets. More tools like Bitcoin enable more free markets. More free markets increase the rate of economic growth.
Sure, but why do you care? You could just cash out and just live on an island, right?
I could, but my phone's on the ground here, so this is a pretty nifty new, you know, iPhone 10 here, but like, I want one that's even better. And the best way to have even better technology is through more economic growth, right? I want flying cars. Flying cars might have already been here if we had had even 1% more economic growth per year over the last 100 years, right? Right now, the median income around in the U.S. is like, you know, $30,000 or $35,000 or something like that. If you had an additional 1% of economic growth compounded over the last, you know, 100 years, I don't have a calculator in front of me, but the average income in the U.S. would be, you know, over $100,000 at this point, probably significantly more than that. So imagine how much more wealth and how much more R&D and how much more new amazing new technologies would be able to be discovered. We'd probably be already, you know, sending, you know, people flying around into space hotels and sending, you know, I remember watching 2001 A Space Odyssey and reading the book as a kid. They were talking about in the year 2001, men were going to be sending, you know, spacecraft to Jupiter and orbiting the moons of Jupiter and exploring stuff over there. We're in 2019. We're nowhere even close to doing that. But when Arthur C. Clarke wrote these books in the 60s, he thought, oh, by 2001, we'll probably be going to Jupiter by that point. But like, no, we didn't make it in time. And if we want to make it to do these amazing things, we need more economic growth. More economic growth leads to better technology. Better technology leads to going to Jupiter and exploring the stars and, you know, extending human lifespan. So like, yeah, I could be sipping a martini on the beach out here, but like, That's not anywhere near as exciting as increasing the rate of economic growth of the world, which increases the amazing technology we have. Let's figure out how to do all these amazing things to make people's lives better, because not only does it improve everybody else's life, it improves my life too, right? It's like Bill Gates is the richest guy in the world, or one of the richest guys in the world. He's probably still using the latest iPhone or the latest Samsung, Galaxy Note or whatever. Just because he has billions of dollars doesn't mean he gets to have a better cell phone than the rest of us, right? It doesn't mean that he has better much of anything, right? He only has the best technology that already exists. But if we want to make even better technology, we need even more economic growth, and more economic growth will lead to better technology to everybody. And even, I remember like my first flat screen plasma TV I bought, it was like $10,000, and it was like 1080p, right? And it weighed probably like 100 pounds. It was, even though it was a flat screen, it was still really heavy. Now a 1080p flat screen TV, you can get one for, if you look for a cheap Chinese one, it's probably under $100 at this point.
They got stuff now that's like wallpaper. Have you seen those TVs?
I haven't seen the wallpaper ones, but I've seen the like really thin ones.
And super thin, it's like wallpaper. You just stick it on the wall.
And so that's an example of how things get better and better through, economic growth leads to better technology for everybody. And I want to be able to use this better technology in my own life. And I'm 40, right? Like I'm about halfway through with the average lifespan of human beings today. Let's figure out the technology to extend the human lifespan, not just to like 100 years. Let's go to, 1,000 years, 10,000 years, right? Like if you die, that's it. Like, if you believe in an afterlife, you have forever for the afterlife. So we might as well spend as much time as we possibly can in this life. And if you don't believe in an afterlife, you're even more motivated to extend this life as long as we can. Let's do that. There's no reason we can't do that. So actually,
do you believe in an afterlife?
I hope that there's an afterlife, but I haven't seen enough evidence to convince me that there is an afterlife. And so I want to enjoy this life as much as I possibly can, and I want this life to live last as long as I possibly can. So I've already taken a substantial amount of the money that I've earned from my cryptocurrency involvement, and I've started investing it in stem cell research facilities and life extension technologies. I think that's the big next step, because if you die, you can't enjoy any of the benefits of this, new improved technologies that are coming down the pipe. So that's one of the next things that I want to focus my time, energy, and financial resources on.
Yeah, because I was just thinking, why is he so driven? Why is he trying to push this forward so much? So I guess things aren't happening fast enough for you. So, if it's not going to happen fast enough for you, you're going to just have to do it yourself, I guess, right?
Yeah, it's like Thanos. My father always told me as a kid, if you want something done right, you have to do it yourself. And I guess there's some truth to that. So.
Yeah, like Thanos says, right? Fine, I'll do it myself. So what do you think about Libra and Facebook, getting into crypto? What do you think that does to the whole space?
So to be honest, I haven't spent much time reading into it, because I saw it's going to be based on a stable basket of fiat currencies. So like, there's not a huge investment.
So even if we don't
aside from that,
if we don't look at the tech, then what do you think about a company like Facebook that's had all these breaches of
they
our?
Don't have a good track record, do they?
Imagine them in charge of our finances. Do you think maybe they've learned the lessons of the past where they've, leaked users' data? They won't do that with their financial data, or having 100 of the most influential big businesses in the world having access to our data as their nodes. Do you think there's a potential there for issues?
As someone who's had, my own Twitter account throttled and my own Facebook post throttled and my own, some of the favorite accounts that I used to follow, like there was an account. It's just posting fun, libertarian-oriented memes on Twitter. I loved this account. It's called Anarchy Ball was the name of this Twitter account.
And all as soon as you said libertarian, I was like, well, yeah.
All of a sudden one day, this account that I used to love watching because the memes were so funny, it was gone. It wasn't on Twitter anymore. And I was like, where is my favorite account that I used to love to follow? It was gone. And like, it was, down the memory hole. They just deleted it off the face there. So Facebook and Twitter don't really have a good track record, and I don't know why we would expect them to be any more permission giving with their cryptocurrency offering than they are. And so I hear a lot of people, they always say like, we need to have, government run healthcare. And I tell them, do you really want, healthcare with the speed and efficiency of the DMV and the kindness and compassion of the IRS? And I'm not so sure if that's a good idea. And whereas if you look at, the Taco Bells and the McDonald's and the Burger Kings, yeah, maybe they're cheap, but boom, they serve their customers fastly and cheaply and reliably. That's a lot better than the service I've ever gotten from the DMV or the IRS. So,
yeah, I can't argue with any of that. And so if you put Facebook now with this global coin, Libra coin, Does that take care of our currency? Does that now bank the underbanked? Does that allow access to 3 billion people? You know, the ability to pay for services and
goods? I'll be cautiously optimistic, but I'm certainly not going to be overly optimistic with that sort of thing. So, but to be, you know, to Facebook's credit, like, it's allowed a lot of people around the world to communicate with other people, though, too. And, you know, maybe they've even helped, like, avoid a war or two. Like, there were a lot of anti-war activists that were on Facebook, and they were all posting I saw there was some page that had Israelis and Palestinians, and they were holding signs like, I'm a Palestinian, and I like Israelis. And Israelis saying, like, I'm an Israeli, and I like Palestinians. Like, please, you know, to our governments, please don't attack each other. And I thought that that was really neat that people were using Facebook as a platform for that sort of thing. And that sort of thing I can really like and appreciate. And if you never meet or talk to anybody, as, you know, Mark Twain said, the best cure for racism is travel. And you go and travel the world and you meet other people and you realize that, like, for the most part, and yeah, there's some psychopaths out there, but most people most of the time in most places are pretty decent people that'll treat you pretty decently well. And I kind of feel like Facebook has, to a large extent, helped bring the world closer together and people to connect with people, but I'm not a fan of the censorship one bit. I think that the problem for people saying things you don't agree with is more people saying more things, not less people saying less things.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more. And then as far as, like, you know, people in general, when you go to different countries, like you just said, like Mark Twain, they don't have issues with other countries, the people themselves. It's the leaders, for one reason or another. You know, they want more of this or more of that. I think we should just put those guys in an octagon and let them work it out.
Duke it out, yeah. So I'll bet my Bitcoin cash on those. So, and I love, when I go to China too, the Chinese people say all the time, we love Americans. We don't like the American government.
Yeah.
And I think it's the same way for most people. Like, most people like most people from other countries, but what the governments are doing in those countries, they're stirring up trouble more often than not. So.
Yeah, where's like a good place that you go for like your information? Because, I mean, obviously you got Bitcoin.com, you guys do your own news and things like that, but where do you go to learn more?
I don't know. I used to love YouTube, but now YouTube's busy censoring all sorts of, you know, channels and information that people like. And, you know, Alex Jones says lots of crazy stuff, but if you look at what he was saying for years, the mainstream media and the government, they're going to censor me. They're going to censor everybody with dissenting ideas. They're going to censor. And then boom, overnight, they proved him right. Right, they totally proved them right one night. They took them off all, you know, Twitter and Facebook and YouTube. Just overnight, they sent them down the memory hole. And yeah, some of the stuff he says is crazy, but some of the stuff he says is true. And the fact that he was saying they were going to censor him, spot on that one. You can't say he was wrong on that one. And he wasn't the only one. There's a whole bunch of other people that just boom down the memory hole. And I was telling you last night at dinner, another, you know, radio program I like to listen to was, you know, Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell. And I was listening to a super old archived episode from like 1988 or something. I was listening to it, an MP3 of it on a flight. And they had a guy on the show that at the time everybody thought it was some crazy conspiracy theorist. But he was saying, the NSA is spying on everybody. They're tapping into every phone line. They're spying on everybody. The NSA is recording everybody's everything. And he was saying this in like 1998, and everybody thought he was just some crazy nutcase on this late night radio show at night. And when I was listening to it, you know, in 2019, oh my God, this guy was right. He wasn't a crazy nutcase back in 1998 saying it. He turned out he was right about everything. So sometimes you never know, like the crazy conspiracy theorists that are saying something that sounds crazy today, sometimes they turn out to be exactly right.
All right, so what's the craziest conspiracy theory out there right now that you think is right that other people don't?
So on that same show, a lot of what goes on that show is, you know, Bigfoot or flying around, you know, UFOs and abducting people. Like, I'm pretty darn skeptical on that. But every once in a while, they'll have like Ray Kurzweil on as a guest. And Ray Kurzweil heads up like the entire AI department at Google. And he says at some point in the near future, machines are going to surpass human intelligence. And that's really going to have a giant impact on the world. And I think that's absolutely true. But when they have him on a guest on the same show where oftentimes they talk about UFO and Bigfoot and this and that, and Bigfoot actually might actually be, like, there might be something out there. I'm skeptical that the Bigfoot are space aliens flying around the UFOs. That I'm more skeptical about. But when they have Ray Kurzweil on the show, the callers that call into the show that totally take the UFO Bigfoot connection stuff seriously, they said, why are you having this nutcase on the show? He's crazy. Computers are never going to be smarter than humans. This guy's, you shouldn't waste your time having him on the show. And so I'm on the side of like, this guy's right. But all the usual listeners of the show think that he's crazy. So I'm on the reverse on that front. So.
Yeah, I mean, look at people now. They're using, you know, Google over asking a neighbor, right? Yeah. So just algorithms. Yeah. You know, if you're trying to find, you know, the best place to eat food, you probably aren't going around asking every single person on the street.
You're checking Google or the internet. Yeah.
You're already looking at AI and stuff like that. Yeah. So you talk about aliens. You believe in aliens? Because you talked about the UFOs.
Yeah, I try to only believe in things in which there's actual evidence for. But if you look at how many stars and how many planets there are out there, I think it would be pretty naive to think that there's not other intelligent life out there somewhere. Can't wait to make contact with them. Have they been to Earth or not? I don't know. Don't know. I haven't seen strong enough evidence for that yet. But be kind of fun if they are coming. So.
Yeah. What would you say to them? Try Bitcoin Cash. look, we're smart.
So that was one of the really fun threads that was on the BitcoinTalk.org forums back in like 2011. There was a big long discussion thread and says, thanks to the invention of Bitcoin, now when we finally make contact with aliens, we won't have to be embarrassed about the type of money we're using anymore. And I thought that was kind of funny because like up until the invention of Bitcoin, we were basically using little round pieces of money or pieces of metal as money. That's pretty
chickens.
Primitive technology, or chickens, right, or tobacco. Now we have something a bit more advanced in the form of bitcoins. So what would I say to them? I don't think I'd say anything to them. I'd start asking them questions, because if they've managed to come here, they have a lot better technology than we have. So I'd start asking them questions.
That's a great point. How did you get here? How'd you do that?
How'd you get here? How'd you do that? Can we do it too? Yeah.
It's kind of be like that, was it Bob Lazar or Lazar?
Bob Lazar.
Reverse engineering things.
Yeah. I'd offer to give them all of my Bitcoin if they'd help teach me things.
Cool. So what do you think the future of blockchain is? Do you see this as, you know, just cryptocurrency only, is just a, you know, means of payment? Do you see this as like we're going to be using blockchain to, you know, fuel everything? It's going to just be running, everything in the world is going to be running on blockchain, or is just cash enough?
I see a lot of people saying, oh, we don't know what the killer app for blockchain technology is, but I think we already know what the killer app is, right? So the killer app is peer-to-peer payments and tokens, right? And with those tokens, you can do ICOs and IEOs and, like, you know, tokenization, all sorts of things. So the two killer apps are peer-to-peer payments, peer-to-peer cash, right, and tokens. And so we're seeing that happen. And Bitcoin Cash is pretty good shot at both of those things. We have tokens in the Monarch wallet. We have tokens in the Badger wallet at Bitcoin.com. There's already a stable coin on Bitcoin Cash. There's more and more stuff happening there, like tokens and peer-to-peer payments. And I'm not just a fan of Bitcoin Cash. I'm a fan of anything that works. So if it works for peer-to-peer payments, and it works for tokens, and it works in a permissionless way, I love it, and I'll gladly be promoting it.
So basically, you know, running businesses on blockchains and things like that are probably just, it's kind of a means for people to raise money, just putting blockchain behind, you know, the name. It's probably something they could use. Yeah, exactly, right? They could probably just use a database, but they use blockchain, and so they use that as kind of a mechanism to raise money. You think just peer-to-peer, you know, basically spending in the IEOs and ICOs and things like that are enough?
Yeah, and look at how much excitement it got, and the only reason it kind of calmed down a little bit is the Ethereum network started to get clogged and have high fees and slow transactions, right? The CryptoKitties clogged it up, and anytime there was a big ICO, the network would kind of clog up, and that's another fun thing about, you know, Bitcoin Cash tokens, 10 times faster than Ethereum tokens, and 100 times cheaper, and a lot more scalable as well, so that's a pretty big deal. So I love Ethereum. I'm not bashing Ethereum, and I hope something even better than Bitcoin Cash comes along. I hope something better than my current iPhone comes along. I hope something better than everything comes along, so that way we all get to use it.
So what about smart contracts, right? Because you got those in Ethereum. What about that for, you know, like Bitcoin Cash or something similar?
It's never been my thing so much. I haven't been as excited or interested, but like Bitcoin Cash has all sorts of scripting as well, so you can write your smart contracts on Bitcoin Cash to some extent. And I know we just launched CashScript. So if you're a software developer, go to developer.bitcoin.com. And like 3 days ago, they launched a CashScript, which I guess is a high-level programming language for Bitcoin Cash that'll compile into the Bitcoin Cash script. So I haven't had a chance to review any of it myself yet, but I know that just launched it. developer.bitcoin.com. So if you're a software developer, hopefully that'll be exciting to you.
Cool. And where do you see yourself like in the next, you know, year or two, right? Because you've got a lot of your time and effort going into Bitcoin Cash. First it was Bitcoin. You got that up and running. Then you went over to Bitcoin Cash. You're doing the same thing here. Where do you see yourself, you know, in a year, 2 years?
I think I'll be busy promoting whatever tool brings more economic freedom to the world, because more economic freedom leads to more economic growth, and more economic growth leads to a higher standard of living for everyone, including myself. So I'll be right here espousing the virtues of more economic freedom for the world.
Gotcha. Who do you kind of look up to in the space that's, you know, that's in crypto, that you're like, you know, he's a good guy, he's doing good things, that, you know, other people should be looking at too, and maybe, you know, following them or checking out what they have to say? Is there anybody out there?
Yeah. There's a lot. And Gavin Andreessen's been quiet now for the last couple of years because he got attacked so viciously with the scaling wars. But I was a really big fan of Gavin Andreessen. I really knew he must be a good guy when I was sitting in the room listening to him give an interview. And they asked him, like, what's a book that you like? And one of the books that he recommended was Economics in One Lesson by Henry Hazlitt. And that was a book I recommended, or I read as a young man. And when he recommended that, I was like, wow, that's a book I love and really shaped my view of the world. In fact, I loved it so much that this most recent year, we gave a copy of it to every single person working at Bitcoin.com. They got a copy of Economics in One Lesson, and it's a fantastic book. And if you read it, you will see the world more clearly, and it will. And if you see the world more clearly, you're able to navigate through the world more effectively. And so that's what everything is in life, is understanding the world we live in order to be able to deal with the world that we're living in. And so if you can understand the world more clearly, you'll be more successful in navigating the world we live in. And so Economics in One Lesson is a great book. And when Gavin recommended that, without any prompting from me, I just happened [S2] Sure. [S1] To be sitting in the room. And I don't think he knew that I was a fan of that book. I was like, this is the right community for me. So I guess thank you to Gavin for being such an amazing steward of Bitcoin for its first maybe five years or so there. So.
Gotcha. So Gavin, anybody else out there that people should look at that's still out there?
Rick Falving, of course, another just amazing thinker. He has a great YouTube channel. I think it's called We Are All Satoshi or something like that. Another really, really thoughtful, insightful, smart guy with lots of amazing insights into lots of different things. Olivia Janssens is another great guy who's really involved much more early on in both Bitcoin and Ethereum. I really like his way of thinking as well. There's a lot of them out there. How about you? Who do you like watching? Tell me.
Well, I guess, you know, I currently be like Andreas Antonopoulos, because he's, you know, one of the guys that, you know, he's been in the space for quite a while. He comes at it kind of from a different angle. So, you know, I like listening to him. Obviously, I love listening to yourself, Brock Pierce. But those are some of the guys that I like to listen to. There's a lot more as far as in the developer side of things, but just as far as just kind of like the overview and kind of the reason for things, those are probably three of the guys that I like to listen to quite a bit. So what's maybe some of the best advice you can give to people that are trying to get into crypto, or they're still trying to wrap their brains around this, and they're like, what is this blockchain thing? What is this crypto thing? What's, you know, this Bitcoin thing? All that kind of stuff. What's some advice that you would give to those people?
I think the best advice is to take a break from reading about it or watching YouTube or videos about it and start using it. Go and download a wallet, get the Monarch wallet or get the Badger wallet or get whatever wallet you want, and send and receive some cryptocurrency, send and receive some tokens. Go and buy some Bitcoin Cash, and then go on over to purse.io and buy something on Amazon for a 20% discount with your Bitcoin Cash. You'll see the usefulness right there. Go and buy something that normally costs $100, pay $80 worth of Bitcoin Cash. It'll ship right to your door from Amazon. Then you'll see the usefulness of this. And if you do it with Bitcoin Cash, it'll cost you a tenth of a penny. If you do it with the BTC version of Bitcoin, it'll cost you an extra $5 or $10. So instead of with Bitcoin Cash, you pay $80 for a $100 item. With BTC, maybe you'll wind up still paying $100 for the $100 item after the fees. What was the point of that? So anyhow, go and try using it, and then you'll see just how useful this is.
So basically, use it. Go out there and try it.
Try it. Give it a try.
And then with Bitcoin.com, so that's yours.
Yep.
Kind of tell us what it does for people that, you know, are trying to, you know, basically figure it all out, right? What is Bitcoin.com? What is it? Is it media? Is it a website? Is it just a place to buy crypto?
It's a little of everything, yes. Uh-huh. It's all of those things and more. My favorite new portion of the website that we just launched is local.bitcoin.com, where you can buy or sell Bitcoin Cash with anyone in any country for any payment method in any amount with no KYC required. What? How is that possible? I'll say it again. You can buy with anybody any amount with no KYC in any country with any payment method. Duffel bags of cash, wire transfers, absolutely anything, because Bitcoin.com never touches the money in any way. It's just a platform, and Bitcoin.com never touches the money. We're using something called, and it's a mouthful because there's not a good way to describe it in a single word, because it was impossible before the invention of cryptocurrency. Nothing like this existed before. We're calling it a non-custodial blind escrow. And so basically you can have someone act as an escrow agent, but the escrow agent never holds the money, and they're blind to the fact that they were even acting as an escrow agent unless there's a problem, and you contact them and say, oh, by the way, we nominated you as the escrow agent. So, and the escrow agent can never touch the money, can never run away with the money, but if there's a dispute, let's say you and I have a trade, the escrow agent can give you the ability to take the money or give me the ability to take by money I mean Bitcoin Cash in this case, to take the Bitcoin Cash back to me. So really an amazing platform. Check out local.bitcoin.com. You can buy buy and sell anything with Bitcoin Cash on that platform right now today. We just launched June 4th. We have tens of thousands of users have signed up. Millions of dollars worth of trades have been initiated already. It's really an amazing platform.
And then you guys also, I think, have found a way to make things more anonymous, right? So basically...
Yeah. Cash Shuffle, we helped fund the development of it. We're busy trying to integrate it into our Bitcoin.com wallet. But Bitcoin Cash transactions can now be really private too. If you go to cashshuffle.com, you can download the Cash Shuffle wallet, and it'll shuffle up your Bitcoin Cash with everybody else's in a permissionless, trustless way. And so all these chain analytics companies, which are chain analytics is just a euphemism for like spy company, right? They're spying on your transactions and then selling your data, probably mainly to governments. Like the biggest customers of these chain analytics companies, these spy companies, are the IRS and the, you know, the DEA and these sorts of law enforcement agencies, because they want to spy on what people are doing with their cryptocurrency. Well, go and download the Cash Shuffle wallet today. And you know, I'm not advising you to, you know, go and do illegal things with your cryptocurrency, but I think privacy is a fundamental human right. You should be able to have private transactions. If you buy a coffee or you buy a polo shirt with your Bitcoin Cash on purse.io, the NSA doesn't need to know about that. So go and use Cash Shuffle, and we're busy building that right into the Bitcoin.com wallet. So the Bitcoin.com wallet will have private transactions. I'd love to urge you with the Monarch wallet, look into building in Cash Shuffle into the Monarch wallet as well. It's an open protocol there. All the code's open source. Let's give people fast, cheap, reliable, and private financial transactions in the Bitcoin Cash network, and that's what we're busy doing.
Sounds great. And it's a great place to catch up on all the news too, right? So it's a great spot to see what's going on in the industry as well.
Cool.
And then more about you, I guess, a little bit, right? So what's some of the craziest things that you've ever done? You know, like personally, man, what do you, when you just...
Drove a little bit too fast as a kid. So used to be into drag racing quite a bit and had some pretty fast cars.
What was your cars?
The fastest one I ever owned was a Shelby Cobra replica. So it's like a 2,200-pound car, and it made 430 horsepower at the wheels. So it's like 550 flywheel horsepower. And that was without the nitrous. I had 150 horsepower nitrous kit on top of it, but I was always too scared to use that. So it was really,
where were you
really
driving
fast.
This at?
I took it to the Sacramento drag strip a couple of times, but I would drive it on, you know, Highway 85 or 101 in the Bay Area when I was younger. And then the fastest I ever drove a car ever was I used to have a X65 Mercedes-Benz. So that's the twin turbo V12 Mercedes. And then I bought the aftermarket Rintec upgrade. So that was it was 950 foot-pounds of torque at the flywheel and about 850 flywheel horsepower. So it made over 630 horsepower at the wheels. Right at the wheels, that's a lot of power. So I ran.
How fast you get it up to?
If you're in a quarter mile drag racing times, I ran an 11.0 second quarter mile time at 133 mile an hour trap speed. That's a really fast trap speed for anybody that's a drag racing fan. So I think the fastest I ever drove that one, I drove it up to like 180 at one point. So.
On the track, of course.
Yeah, I was a little bit irresponsible at that age. Now I'm 40 and I wouldn't do that anymore. But, yeah.
Cool. So you got any big plans? Anything that you know, the world should be known, you know, should hear about, maybe a little bit before it happens? Something to be excited about?
I think Cash Shuffle coming to the Bitcoin.com wallet's a big deal. Oh, our wallet's much faster than it used to be. So if you make a new wallet on Android, it's rolled out to 100% of Android wallets and still rolling out slowly to the iPhone wallets. But it used to take a second or two from the time you'd hit slide to send in the Bitcoin.com wallet to actually send the transaction. Now it's basically done sending as soon as you've hit the slide to send button there. So yeah, give that a try if you haven't already.
Fast money. Who doesn't
love
that?
Fast money, yeah.
Who doesn't
love
that, right?
Yeah.
Cool. Well, it's been awesome hanging out with you, hearing your story. So
thank you for the opportunity.
Thanks a bunch, peeps. Catch you on the next one. God bless.
And if you like this, share it with a friend and subscribe to this channel. So thank you.
Welcome back, everybody. Huge thanks to Roger. Really appreciate you inviting us into your home and taking the time to tell us your side of the story. There's been so many people out there over the years that have been telling us your story for us that may not have been true. And it was pretty awesome to hear it directly from you. I mean, sitting next to this guy, you can just kind of feel how driven he is. If you hear the stories of all the different companies that he's invested in and kind of given the legs to that we still use every day in crypto, it's pretty freaking awesome. Not to mention the philanthropy side of things that he really doesn't talk about. And him is an advisor for Monarch. You know, the guy, everything that he said he was gonna do for us, he has. So in my book, he's a pretty stand-up guy. So I'd love to hear what you think about him in the comments below. But something that, you know, one of the things that I find really amusing and funny is that a lot of people thought that he created Bitcoin, that he was Satoshi Nakamoto. Back in the day, people accused him of creating Bitcoin and he just made it to make himself a bunch of money. But obviously we know he didn't create Bitcoin, he was just one of the biggest evangelists for it. Then he went to Bitcoin Cash and started being an evangelist for Bitcoin Cash, and people there again think that he created Bitcoin Cash. But really, he's a supporter. So hopefully you guys learned something about this. You know, I had a great time hearing him. I probably could have done a better job interviewing. I just got done doing like a 3-mile run, had a huge coffee. It was just really hard to cool down. It's beautiful here, as you can see. This is the backdrop. You know, we showed you the ocean yesterday, but it is hot. It is muggy, but it's a beautiful place, beautiful people. I had a great time. I hope you did too. Hopefully you got some value out of this. I appreciate you, Roger.
Just a friendly reminder, Crypto Beetle shows are never financial advice, recommendations, or trading strategies. The views expressed here are solely that of Robert Beetles and his guests. Robert Beetles is the co-founder of the Monarch Wallet, host of Trading View Sessions, Crypto Beetles on YouTube, and on several entities. Robert's opinions here do not reflect that of those entities. Some information shared here may not actually be factual. These shows are for information and entertainment purposes only. Never invest a single Satoshi or penny in anything without first seeking the counsel and advice of a professional financial advisor. Robert Beetles is not a financial expert or advisor. Investing in anything is super dangerous. You can lose all of your money, so always trade at your own risk. Please help us grow the family. Give us a comment and review on the Apple or Google Play Store. It's super quick and easy. Just scroll down, click the little stars, comment, and just help us grow the fam.
Thanks a bunch. Love you. God bless you. Catch you on the next one.